Right. So it's a historic day today in Thorn. We've got a wonderful ship has turned up at the Thorn moorings, and it's Daybreak. And Daybreak was built in Thorn at Dunstan's in 1934. And I'm with Tony and Sally Woodward, and they're the owners. And we're in a beautiful cabin at the back of the boat, and the boat looks absolutely fantastic from the outside. It looks absolutely immaculate. So, Tony, can you just perhaps tell us a bit about how long you've owned Daybreak and the history of its restoration and so on?
Yes, we bought Daybreak in 1979. At the time, we were living on a very small narrowboat, but wanted to start having a family and realised we needed a bit more space. I did some research into what kind of vessel we wanted, and because I was born in Doncaster, when I came across Humber Keels, I thought this is ideal, it's the right size, and I love that association with where I was born. And I'd always fancied something that could sail. And we were very lucky because Daybreak had actually just been brought down onto the Thames, so it wasn't far from where we were living, and we bought her. And she was pretty much straight out of trade. The hold was just an empty steel box. She had the engine that was sort of working okay, and it had the original cabin. And when we first moved on board, by then we had a one-year-old son, and we actually lived in the aft cabin, which was the traditional family accommodation when these were working sailing keels.
And is that where we're sat now in the aft cabin?
And
it's absolutely, just for the listeners, it's beautiful. It's varnished mahogany with mirrors and a lovely little fireplace, but quite cosy for a family, even with two adults and one child.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. And we pretty soon got stuck into converting what would have been the hold that would have carried up to 110 tonnes of grain, converting that into living accommodation. So now we have plenty of space with lots of sleeping cabins and two bathrooms.
Yeah, come on, Sally's just come with some tea, which is really nice. And we were just hearing about you bringing up the small child at first in this being your main living space. But you managed, did you, Sally?
Well, yes, because we'd lived on a narrowboat. There seemed to be more space even in this cabin than there was on the narrowboat we had.
Yeah. Okay, so you converted the cabin first. This is the biscuits now. We're getting everything here, which is absolutely brilliant. Thanks very much, Sally. So you converted the main cabin first so that you had more living space. But obviously that didn't include all the sailing gear and all that. You didn't do that straight away, I presume.
No, but we knew from the first that we were going to re-rig her and that we wanted the outside to look as original as possible. So everything we did, when we planned the layout inside, we took account of what we would need to do when we restored the rigging. And in fact, some bits of the rigging, like the lutchet, which is the steel box that the mast actually sits in, we actually had that installed quite early on.
Because you wanted to build everything else around it.
That's right,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And how on earth did you sort of source things like the mast and the rigging and all that sort of thing? It must be really a life's work in itself.
Well, yes, unfortunately there was very little original gear left at all. Although fortunately by that stage the Humber Keel and Sloop Preservation Society had restored the Humber Keel Comrade. So we were able to go and sail on her and do lots of drawings and measurements and find out exactly how things ought to be. But then it was a case of actually coming back and actually reconstructing, building all the different parts.
And did you do all this at your home mooring on the Thames, or did you go to the Thames estuary or something to get all this done?
No. That would have been far too simple. No, we did it all on our mooring, which is actually on an island, which only has footbridge access.
Yeah.
So everything had to actually be carried over the footbridge, and which was quite interesting when it was things like we were making the lee boards, which are made of solid oak, and are sort of the planks are 14 feet long and about 3 inches thick at the top. So, there was lots of humping things about.
Yeah, I seem to recall when you'd finished the mast, there were 14 people needed to help us get it onto the ship. Mm.
I was wondering that whether you did all this on your own, but you obviously had some helpful friends and things at times when you needed them.
There's a tremendous river community, river and canal community, and it's linear. Our neighbours are on the rivers and canals, really.
Yeah. So how long after the boat, after you got the boat in its sort of fairly basic form, did you first get her to under sail?
Right, so it was actually 1998 that she actually sailed again. Because obviously the priority was to convert the hold for the living accommodation,
yeah,
and sort of create a home for ourselves. But and in fact, it was rather odd, because although we were slowly making progress towards it, we actually had a bit of a catastrophe when we had a major fire on board. We had a Rayburn, a solid fuel Rayburn, which for some totally unknown reason suddenly went bang in the middle of the night and set fire to the galley, which then spread through into the hold. That was fairly disastrous, but we, again, with some help with some friends, we sort of set to, and we decided that was a good time to put a steel top on, because previous to that we just had the original wooden hatch boards with canvas over. So we put the steel top on, and then I got a friend to help me with that. And
but you used the original frames to get
so
the right curve.
The shape's the same, but then we had all this welding gear and cutting gear and things, and we said, oh, while you're there, you know, we might as well do the chain plates. And then, oh well, now we've done those, we might as well do a bit more. And then it sort of snowballed from there. So there's sort of a bit of me that has a sense of, you know, Daybreak was getting a bit fed up of waiting for me to do the to do the re-rigging, and said, come on, get on with it, and gave me a big kick up the backside.
Yeah.
Because it was only actually 2 or 3 years after that we managed to get things
years, yeah,
refitted and we were sailing.
And know, I suppose so. You had a bit more time when I don't know whether you had more than one child, but I mean, your child was growing up a bit and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you're a long way from home now. If you may be near home because you're originally from Doncaster, but what I mean is
you're in our home actually.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You're a long way from your home mooring on the Thames. So you obviously have done a pretty big voyage this year.
Indeed.
Don't know if it's the biggest you've ever done, but maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
Yes, indeed. And we'd sort of planned that because we're now both retired, which means that we hadn't got to sort of rush back. Normally our sort of summer cruise was always punctuated by, we have to get back to go back to work. We both worked in education, and so we sort of thought it would be good to bring her back to her home waters. We had come back actually in 2002-03, but then we'd done very much a passage from the Thames and barely stopping on the way, and we thought it would be nice to explore some of those other places on the East Coast that we'd read and heard lots about. And then because we were doing this voyage, we applied to the National Historic Ships, which is a national organisation that keeps a register of all the historic vessels. And each year they choose a flagship. And so we applied and told them about the voyage that we'd planned. And they were very excited about it and chose us as their flagship for the year. So we left our mooring at the end of June, and headed off down the Thames, doing bits of sailing whenever we could, and we've been into lots of the rivers and creeks all the way up the East Coast, and attending various maritime festivals in places like Harwich, Ipswich and Yarmouth. We also went on to the Norfolk Broads, where we met up with the Norfolk Wherry Albion, which is another traditional sailing vessel that's been restored and is run by a group of enthusiasts, and they were very pleased to see us, and we had a super weekend, and we actually sailed together on the Broads, which was probably, the Norfolk Broads used to have their own version of the keel, a Norfolk keel, but they disappeared about 100 years ago, so that was probably at least 100 years since a keel of any type had sailed on the Norfolk Broads.
Right, and so you eventually got to Humber about 3 months, 3 or 4 months later.
We did indeed, and had a fantastic welcome, because we managed to time our arrival to coincide with a folk festival going on in Hull. So we went into the marina where there were several other historic vessels, Comrade and Amy House. And we had a fantastic
Phyllis
weekend. Phyllis, yeah, and Evangeline.
Yep.
And had a super weekend of music in Hull. And then we, after staying there for a bit, we went up to Beverley, where there was another little festival organised to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Amy Howson, the Humber sloop.
Her birthday.
Yes, yeah. So we had a bit of a party up there. Lots of people came. And then we went back to Hull Marina with our cargo of this half a ton of wheat, which we were kindly donated by a local farmer. And we got it all loaded into sacks and hoisted it aboard. And the plan is to take that from Hull to Doncaster, which would have been her original trading route.
Right. Well, I expect there's people listening who probably may even remember that or were involved at Dunstan's in actually building the Daybreak, which I understand was from your card was the last ship to be built as with under trading ship under sail. Is that right?
To carry cargo under sail. We believe that's the case. Yeah, she was. It was 1934 she was built, which is very late for building a vessel that was purely working under sail. And although there are lots of Thames sailing barges which carried on trading much later than Daybreak under sail, they were actually built earlier.
Right, and you do quite a lot of sailing, don't you, whenever you can, which I think is fantastic because it's a big boat and there's only two of you most of the time, I presume. But
yeah, usually if we're sailing out on tidal waters, we'll have at least one other person with us. But Sally and I have sailed the boat on our own, you know, in sheltered waters in very light winds. And we were very pleased. Yesterday we made the voyage from Kidby, where again we'd had a really warm welcome and a sort of community event that had been organised around our arrival. So we travelled from Kidby yesterday and we were able to do about an hour and a half of the trip under sail, which was fantastic.
Before another wire came across the
car. Yeah, that must be quite a problem. I mean, it's a massive mast to lower and everything, but you're obviously very skilled at it. So, anyway, you've got this wheat on board, which is kind of recreating what this ship actually did for most of her career. So tell us a bit about that. Was it wheat from Hull to Doncaster?
So basically they would... The mill in Doncaster, Hanley's Mill, would use imported wheat and it would be imported to the docks in Hull in big ships, and then it would be offloaded from the ships onto keels, which would then be, would either sail or be towed up the Humber onto the canal system, either going in at Kidby or at Goole, and then they would travel on the canals through to Doncaster and then unload at the mill and then quickly turn around and go back for some more. That trade actually started to disappear in the late 30s because of improvements in milling technology and baking the bread, that they were able to use English wheat rather than relying on imported wheat. So obviously that was able to come direct from the farms, rather like the farm where we got our load of wheat from, and so, you know, it was a trade that did start to sort of disappear after the Second World War.
Yeah. Okay. And so, if anybody, I mean, it's causing a sensation down here in Thorn. People are coming down visiting. It's a nice day, and the boat looks absolutely fantastic. But you're going to be here. What, for the weekend and then sailing off to Doncaster next weekend? It will be probably sailing, won't it, if you can?
We'll certainly hope to sail, you know, a couple of stretches once we've worked out where the wires are, so we can make sure we don't fall foul of those. But yes, and
if we can't do it this way, we'll probably do it the other way, can't we?
Yes,
And then what's the plans for the rest of the summer? I presume you're going to be going back to your home mooring, are you?
No, we're going to stay up in this part of the world because, as I say, we came before and we did a bit of the waterways, but there's, because, you know, the canals up here were built for these type of vessels, so there's a lot of places that we can get to. So now we haven't got to rush back for work. We're going to stay around, we'll overwinter, probably around Goole, and then we'll be able to next year go to visit places like York and Lincoln and Leeds, Nottingham.
Right.
And really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, it's going to be really nice to have you around this area for the next 6 months or more, and it's been great to visit, and I know people will be interested in coming down. So Tony and Sally, thank you very much for talking to us, and hope you enjoy your time in Thorn.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much.
Thank you.